you're listening to WESU 88.1 Middletown. This is Argus News Radio, and I'm your host, Pierce Kelly. Argus News Radio combines the media of radio with the print journalism of the Argus, the Wesleyan student newspaper, to bring you various news items of interest. The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. This program may contain material not suitable for children or sensitive listeners. If you are offended by profanity, please tune out now. If you have questions about the WESU indecency and obscenity policy, please contact our board of directors at 860-685-7703, or you can send an email to wesu@wesufm.org. Today we'll open with some news pertaining to education. Like all universities, Wesleyan is facing hard budget decisions in order to cope with the economy. The university's latest plan offers union workers on campus an optional early retirement. The new plan, called Voluntary Separation Package, provides university employees of 15 years or more a choice to retire with continued benefits. Of the 96 employees offered the package, 26 accepted. Wesleyan has yet to resort to the heavy layoff seen at some schools like Yale, which announced it would also be freezing some salaries and deferring raises. The Wesleyan administration has said the voluntary separation packages were offered to candidates the least likely to be laid off. Meanwhile, the McDonough Elementary School will also be witnessing some changes. According to October 1, 2008 enrollment data, the proportion of minorities at McDonough is 28.67% greater than the average for Middletown area elementary schools, making McDonough racially imbalanced. Any school with a percentage of minority population falling outside the range of 25% less to 25% more than the district average is considered racially imbalanced. These schools, like McDonough, are required by the state of Connecticut to submit a correctional plan to the school board. A feasibility study recommends the award-winning McDonough School redefine their attendance boundaries, a controversial procedure where shifting attendance neighborhoods, or redistribution, would cause an intentional demographic change within the school. Currently, Wesleyan runs nearly half a dozen programs with McDonough, and while there was originally discussion of turning McDonough into a charter or magnet school partnered with Wesleyan, the plans were not executed. In further education news, Wesleyan's AIDS and Sexual Health Awareness Group plans to return to the Middletown community. The student-run group trains Wesleyan students to teach safe sex education in local schools. Last year, parents expressed concerns over the awareness group's agenda being taught in the public school, resulting in two condemning articles published by the Middletown Press. After submitting a mission statement and letter to the Board of Education, the awareness group is back, currently planning the first Wesleyan Middletown STD testing day on April 13th. After the STD clinic on Main Street was closed, there has been no available STD testing site in Middletown. In remembrance of former student Joanna Justin Jinch, class of 2010, four Wesleyan students and an alum are working to create a health clinic in Nairobi, Kenya, named after their classmate. The clinic would be an expansion to the Kibera School for Girls, constructed by two alums this past summer. The group believes the clinic will continue Justin Jinch's passion for issues of women's health rights. Now we have an interview with two Wesleyan sophomores who have started a new student forum on pornography, which is listed in the sociology department. In 1998, there was actually a College of Letters class called Pornography, Writing of Prostitutes, that aimed to examine the implication of pornography in so-called perverse practices and consider the inflections of the dominant white heterosexual tradition by alternative sexualities. At the end of the course, students produced their own pornographic project, several of which ultimately included graphic videos of various sexual acts. The course received national media attention, much of it negative, and was removed from the curriculum by President Doug Bennett the following year. This new class, which was highly sought after, had about 35 applications for 15 available slots. The final 15 students were selected based on essays they'd written. So here is Argus News Radio's Lainey Barron with the interview.
So I'm here in the studio with Sid and Rob. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
So you've started a new student forum called Pornucopia. Could you talk a little bit about what inspired you to start such a forum?
Well, I started it by taking a class with Paramita Sanyal called Economic Sociology, and in the class, we covered informal markets and magazine vendors, and we covered like informal sex work such as prostitutes and telephone sex workers and escorts. And I wrote a paper on how the society shapes like which kind of women enter which kind of like sex work. And then I did a final paper solely on pornography. And while I was doing it, Sid stopped by and we started arguing about it, and we just kind of got inspired to do this whole thing.
Can you talk a little bit about what went on that argument?
Rob had a particularly biased view on why women enter the industry, especially sex work, instead of pornography. And I had a different viewpoint on that. I don't exactly remember what the argument was about, but it kind of inspired us, and it was pretty heated. But it inspired us to realize or acknowledge the fact that there is a lot that's unsaid and that there's a lot that needs to be explored. And I think that's what got us started.
Great. And could you talk about your class, how it's structured, what the focus is specifically?
We try to focus on the relationship between society and pornography, and just how it has evolved alongside each other, and kind of how society has pushed pornography into the background, and then pornography comes back and does something extremely radical, and is pushed to the foreground, and it just kind of goes back and forth.
What about the different classes you're teaching? You talked about the five different structures of the class.
We broke the class up into five sections. We started by covering the relationship between pornography and technology, and how different mediums kind of bring forth different aspects of the whole industry. And then we moved on to how society has kind of done this whole foreground background thing to create like a mass market. And then we are moving on to attacks against pornography by both like feminists and like legal attacks against it. And then queer, fetish, and foreign pornography. Finally, a study of the actual people that work inside the industry, and then the future of porn, and how both we as a class and other people who have written on the subject believe it's going to change.
Okay. And you two guys teaching about a female-dominated industry, how has the reaction to that been? Have you had anyone question your motives or question class?
We haven't had anyone question our class, because in our first class we showed the syllabus and what exactly we are doing, and there's a lot of work with average of around 110 pages of reading and like six essays that the kids have to write, and then multiple screenings, and attendance is really important. So no one really questioned our motives, and it was funny that we hardly got any straight male applicants. So it was a good sign, I guess, that people actually were taking us seriously.
Gave us credibility.
Okay. And to ask, you know, the provocative question here, how do you two feel about the idea that porn perpetuates a chauvinistic perspective and degrades women?
I guess there's like multiple schools of thought on that whole thing. There is like obviously arguments that it completely degrades women. There's arguments that it empowers women. There's also arguments that it degrades anyone who works in the industry, and therefore it also degrades men. Or like similarly, like there obviously a lot of people feel that it empowers men by allowing them to feel that they are kind of dominant over women. But I guess more the point of the class is...
Yeah, for the class, we just wanted to explore both aspects and then allow the students to come to a decision on how they felt themselves, because both sides, if you explore them, are equally strong, whether it's like male being empowered or degraded, as like for the man, it's just his body part that really matters, whereas it's objectifying the woman, but everything the man is doing is for the woman. And then on the other hand, there's...
Women's party parts being objectified.
And
everything
and
that the woman is doing is solely
to please
for the
man. So both sides are equally strong, we feel, and we're exploring that through class.
Great. And you guys are talking, your class is specifically about porn as it relates to society. How do you feel about the paradox of sexuality in the U.S. in terms of commercialism versus stigma?
I think one big thing that got us started on the idea was that porn cannot exist without a market, and the market is created by consumers. So there is a huge amount of consumers present in the U.S. for porn to be a $25 billion industry. So this paradox which we encounter was something that we wanted to explore, and we thought like getting a class and getting a bunch of kids who are excited about it together to discuss such an idea would be a great way to kind of try and figure out the paradox, and I think we're still working on it.
And like at the same time, anything that society deems as unacceptable or taboo is kind of provides like a motive for porn to come through and challenge that whole notion and kind of create, stir up this whole controversy that allows it to survive and allows it to continue bringing something new so that there's kind of a steady revenue, like a steady revenue coming to any pornographer.
Right. And Sid, coming from India, do you feel there's a cultural divide on the subject?
Not really. At first, I actually thought that Americans would be more liberal compared to families or people in India. But then after meeting a lot of people at Wesleyan, I realized that people in America, also a lot of them, are very closeted in terms of talking about sexuality and about sex. And I was really lucky that I came from a liberal family, and my parents talked to me about sex at a very young age and stuff. But I think there isn't that much of a difference, which was kind of surprising for me.
Mm. And last question for you guys. Why do you feel this is such an important class to be teaching?
For me, at least, pornography is everywhere, and I think it's something that people need to accept, although it is stigmatized and it is a taboo. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's everywhere and it's in everyone's face, especially with the advent of the internet. So it's something that needs to be addressed, just like drugs or alcohol or anything like that. It's like drugs exist and you are going to be exposed to them. But you need some guidance, or society needs to address the question of pornography. And I think that's one huge part of our class.
Yeah, at the same time, porn is representative of a fantasy, and it represents a fantasy that a society kind of desires and the society like calls for. And if you're to study pornography is in a sense to study society on a deep level, where their intrinsic values and their intrinsic desires. And I guess the whole point of our class is just to kind of discover and really find the whole reason why there's such a either a positive outlook on the industry or such a negative outlook on the industry.
Great. Well, thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Lainey Barron interviewing Wesleyan sophomores Rob and Sid about their new student forum on pornography.
Hi, this is DJ Johnny B, reminding you that the next few weeks will be especially critical to the Haitian earthquake survivors, and I need you to be an advocate for those who have lost everything. Please visit www.ctforhaiti.org for details on how you can help. Or go to any Webster Bank branch and let them know you'd like to make a donation to help Haiti. Make your tax-deductible donations to the Haitian Earthquake Relief Fund today. Thank you for your support.
Hi, I'd like to tell you about Wesleyan Potters in Middletown, Connecticut. Wesleyan Potters was founded in 1948 to promote the learning and development of skills and crafts. Classes are held year-round, along with special events such as lectures, exhibits, demonstrations, and films. If you'd like to find out more about Wesleyan Potters, you can visit their website at www.wesleyanpotters.com. Wesleyan Potters is a nonprofit cooperative guild.
Here's Argus News Radio's own Benjamin Soloway interviewing senior Kiara DeLillo about her senior thesis.
Hello there, we're with Kiara DeLillo, and we'll be discussing her thesis in Islam in the American civil sphere. Hello there, Kiara.
Hi.
So, in the most basic terms you can put it, what's your thesis?
My thesis is talking about two community organizations in New York City that, as far as I can tell, are both involved in a process of creating a Muslim American citizen, a Muslim American civic actor.
When did you first become interested in studying Islam?
My first interest probably comes from freshman year. I was in a freshman year initiative that some 2010 kids might fondly remember that was about women, rights, Islam, and modernity.
Tell us a little bit about your major.
I'm a university major in Muslim studies, which is a program that I designed as a second semester sophomore. It combines language coursework, history coursework, either sociology or anthropology, a bunch of religion classes. There's a remarkable amount that fits into it that is all on offer, and now there's a program for it.
Are you the only person in the program?
Yes, but that's sort of the point, right?
And did you do any time abroad in conjunction with this major?
I went to Morocco in the spring of my junior year, spring 2009, and I was there for 4 months living in the capital, Rabat. Morocco is a majority Muslim country, as well as being French-speaking, and that fit my other major as well.
And what's your other major?
French studies.
Okay. And what do you think you took away from your time in Morocco that contributed to your understanding of your major and this project you're working on now?
Well, despite the fact that my thesis is entirely about American Islam, I think the thing that I really brought back from Morocco was an understanding of what it looks like, what it feels like, what people are like when they are Muslim and living in a majority Muslim society. There are remarkably respected scholars who like to say that Islam and modernity are incompatible, that there's some sort of contradiction, but people in Morocco are living and negotiating that identity every day. There is no contradiction, and I brought that home with me.
And what would you describe as the conclusion of your thesis, in simplest terms?
My conclusion is that these two community organizations, one of which is attached to a mosque and the other which is a secular organization, that both are helping to create for American Muslims participation without assimilation. That is, that their American citizenship and the acts that constitute citizenship are intertwined with their Muslim identity, and that there's a place for each in the other.
And do you think your thesis will make any claims that go against popular public or scholarly opinion, or that are controversial in some way?
If you believe Daniel Pipes, our friend from campuswatch.org, then this is a controversial conclusion, because he is in the business of saying on a pretty regular basis that the Muslims in America already, and lots of Muslims outside of America, want to bring the country down or institute religious law or commit violent acts against other American citizens who don't happen to be Muslim. And he points to community organizations as spearheading that effort and having ties to radical organizations. And I'm finding that that's just not true.
Given the role that some Muslim Islamic actors have played, the antagonistic role they've played in U.S. foreign policy endeavors and in domestic issues, do you have any concerns about Islam and its link to these factors?
I don't, and that is because I think that in the foreign policy issues that people are talking about, or the domestic issues, I mean, someone would probably point to Fort Hood as a counterexample to this thesis. At that point, you enter into acts that practicing Muslims would say put somebody outside of Islam. Somebody who commits a violent act, not that they're a bad Muslim, they're just not Muslim. They're not following the faith. And so in both cases, it gets into the realm of politics rather than religion. I think it's not really relevant to people who are believers who are also citizens, which is what I'm after.
Okay. So do you have any concluding thoughts, both about the academic program you created for yourself and about this culminating project?
The great thing about this project is that even though I sometimes feel like I'm still not a specialist and I've just hit the tip of the iceberg, I also have a degree of expertise and a degree of immersion after going to Morocco about this subject that in freshman year was very frustrating and I knew was very problematic and full of things that were being misrepresented and things that are still misrepresented on a daily basis to the American public. And so it's satisfying. It's exciting to begin to have sort of open eyes about it, to be able to say, I think there's something going on here that isn't quite right.
Okay, Kiara. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all for Argus News Radio this week. Thank you for listening. You can hear us next week at 2:30 on Tuesday, same time, same place. Or you can hear us online at wesleyanargus.org, where you can also hear past episodes. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next week.